Donny Hathaway here on African Rhythms. What a track to begin yet another African Rhythms Radio. All summer, we've been overviewing one of the most legendary local soul singers. We're talking 60s through to the 80s. Jason Hoover was ruling it. And welcome back, Jason and Mike Ingram.
Good evening, everybody.
Hey, it's really good to be back again, Dave. It seems like we live here now, and I think that we're going to have some good shows.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Bobby Taylor sadly passed recently, and we all went to a wonderful memorial on West Broadway.
Yep, on West Broadway. And, you know, I thought what was beautiful about it was how everybody spoke up and did what they could to clarify what we already knew, that Bobby Taylor got a raw deal in this town. And it's not even being objective. This is just flat out honest. Bobby Taylor got screwed. And people were stepping up and saying, you know what, that's exactly the truth. And oftentimes in a town like Vancouver, where often if you're not part of that clique, you're not going to get your due respect. Bobby had to wait till maybe he ascended, but the fact that there were only a handful of people there when there could have been thousands is directly connected to the fact that Vancouver wanted to kill the soul. They did not want soul music to manifest in any type of form to a degree where there would be a, quote, Vancouver sound that would have been trademarked by acts like Bobby Taylor and Jason Hoover.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the opening track on the show today, Donny Hathaway, it just shows, you know, someone of his incredible talent you could compare to somebody like Bobby Taylor, because Donny Hathaway was a genius, mm-hmm. and they didn't really know what to do with him. So that 45 we heard just kind of got slept on. But Bobby Taylor's the same. I mean, he was just so good that we hardly, sadly, deserved him here.
Well, you know, one person can make a lot of difference. And one thing that came out of that memorial service was how he affected everybody in and out of the studio. You know, people who maybe didn't have aspirations in music, he inspired them. Even if it was just to hang out at the house or eat or something like that, little trifling things. But if Bobby had been given the kind of love that he was putting out there, you would have had artists like Bobby, Jason, people that came after them realizing that, wow, I can come to Vancouver and I can do something here because there's a foundation laid for me. You know, we had one guy, Prince, generate a whole sound for his city by himself. You go to Minneapolis, you can hear on the radio, you can hear The Time, you can hear Jesse Johnson's Review, you can hear Jill Jones, you can hear Vanity Six. All of those people came from Prince. And even though some of it sometimes sounds like it's all his music, it is because it's all his music.
Excuse me.
but you know it's true. And this is not to dismiss Vancouver, because it's a beautiful city and there's some beautiful people. I just think there's some really ugly underbelly clique nonsense that squelched what could have been a beautiful situation artistically.
Yeah. One thing was for sure about that venue and that thing is that basically the depth of soul talent that was in that room, the depth of mm-hmm. people that were inspired by Jason and Bobby Taylor. And I got up on the mic and gave my own mm-hmm. improvised speech.
It was good.
But you know what? It helped unite Jason and Bobby and to see how important it is to have leaders.
Yes. You've got to have a foundation in the Your house is only as strong as your foundation. Yeah. And that would have left a nice beginning for anybody else deciding, well, I don't have to go to Toronto.
Oh, that's right.
You know, there's a burgeoning music scene in Vancouver. We got soul action going on here. We got funk action going on here. And all of that never manifested because someone decided or some people decided that wasn't going to work.
Well, even in more recent years, you know, we look at the 90s, and that was a tough, struggling time for Jason and for Bobby Taylor. But they both spent time here in Vancouver. And then you get to this next track we're going to hear. And here is Bobby Taylor in Vancouver in 2006. And he walks into the record shop, you know, after I'd done the interview and whatever. He's like, David, yeah, I just went off to Philly and the Motown artist did Philly, and the Philly artist did Motown. He was involved with this project. Mm-hmm. And here's Bobby Taylor doing Sunshine, the incredible OJ's songs.
Go ahead.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead with that?
Motown is coming to Philly.
Can you believe that, ladies and gentlemen? Bobby Taylor, that living here in Vancouver, would live. Make such an epic track, would be in such high esteem that Philadelphia International would accept him as mm-hmm. a brethren, as one of them, and fly him out from Vancouver. He'd go to Philly, make this record, Motown Meets Philly, come back. Where is the local media? Mm-hmm. Where is even any acknowledgments of this going on?
Thank you. I sense Bunny Sigler's hand in this. Bunny yeah. Sigler was like one of the unsung heroes of Philadelphia International. Yeah. He was a singer, but he was better as a producer. He was great in the studio.
Bell? And Tom Bell was the greatest, man.
But, you know, the thing that bothers me most about this was that...
Do you know who the executive producer was? Phil Hurd.
Look at that. Yeah. Look yeah. at that. Yeah. See? And... Here's a man who carried the name of an entire city with his group. Mm, you know, right. You heard Bobby Taylor, you heard the Vancouvers. What other city gets that kind of love?
Yeah.
Nowhere in North America.
Never.
And they turned him out like a $2 hoe. I got to say it just like it is, because that's exactly how they treated him.
That's a real good
metaphor. I mean, shortly after Bobby Taylor, living here in Vancouver, went to Philly and did this, he was off to China and then Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sadly, we lost him forever.
That's right.
It's a tribute to him as an artist, because he did that song over 70 years old, and they only took it down half an octave. So his instrument was in place. That's an amazing feat.
What tune? 72 years old.
72 years old.
What tune? Oh, yeah.
Sunshine. The song Sunshine.
The OJs.
Oh, that was fabulous. Wow. Are you saying he recorded it in Hong Kong?
No, he recorded it before he went to Hong Kong. Okay. He was living here in Vancouver in 2006, and he flew to Philly to do that project, Motown Philly. Yeah, he gave me the promo that he walked into my shop. So rest in peace, Bobby Taylor. I'm telling you that the most moving occasion in local black history I have ever seen was the Bobby Taylor Memorial. Maybe it didn't have the numbers, but the quality of people and the integrity of the people in that room is unprecedented. Yep. Like, it was unbelievable, really.
I'll take quality over quantity any day. But you know what? There definitely should have been more people, but you can only get as much as what you're exposed to. And if Vancouver's not exposed to soul, that was not Bobby Taylor's fault.
Well, you want to know how bigger Bobby Taylor is? Los Angeles will be the next host of a Bobby Taylor Memorial, and that's happening in late September. Mm-hmm. And that will be bigger than this. Janet Jackson has been cited walking around with a Bobby Taylor cap. So, you know, the Jacksons have acknowledged the great Bobby Taylor.
Isn't
no
that
question.
Wonderful, man? That is so wonderful. Giving back. It might be too late. He's gone to another phase of beingness. I'll leave it like that. And they have respected him all the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's another gentleman that got completely overlooked. And what a phenomenal talent to come along in the 60s and do Northern Soul type. But then here he is, Darryl Fletcher, in the mid-70s doing tracks like this. one of the greatest vocalists ever to be featured on African Rhythms. To longtime listeners, I think that that would be, common knowledge.
Oh, man. I mean, you got pipes like that. That's just illegal to hear stuff like that. Rance Allen and his abilities just to sing by himself, never mind any other stuff. That's a very un-gospel song. Yeah. You know, it's not arranged in any kind of, you don't hear any eighths or ninths there on a chord.
There's no backup gospel.
There's no backup gospel chords. That was strictly crossover, a la the Winans when they started to open up and do songs like Heaven.
Right. The Mazelle Brothers production. Mm-hmm. So it's got that kind of sophisticated, slightly jazz funk type production. Yeah.
I'd like you to hear Are You Ready? Because that is closest to. Plus, well, there's one more, but Are You Ready was one of the first that I had ever done to do close to being gospel song. Mm-hmm.
Right,
And we got down, and I'm talking, we were breathing the song. We were eating it. We were breathing it. And I tell you, we created a choir.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of that Rance Allen?
The last song?
Yeah.
It was wonderful. it was definitely wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's a fantastic talent. I mean, Mike and I are more familiar with him from listening to him for a few years, but he gets into a song.
Three octaves, bro.
That is something. And not too many vocalists, even today or even in the yesteryear, did stuff like that.
No, exactly. You've got to have some kind of an ability to go high and low like that.
Yeah. Bobby could do it. Michael Jackson could do it. They did all their own Bee Gees, and they did all their, both of them. You know, I mean, he was there. Bobby was doing it for him, and he was seeing it, how to do it. So when he tried it himself with his own little producer that he had, he succeeded.
This is our guest tonight, along with Mike Ingram from New York City. We've got Jason Hoover back, and he is a local soul singer, and he's commenting a little bit about Bobby Taylor, who just passed recently. Of course, Bobby Taylor in the Vancouvers. This is all spellbindingly fascinating local soul history. But a little footnote in Bobby Taylor's career is this 45, although he was under contract to Motown with TaylorMade Soul and then the first album, there was one more thing that came out on Motown before he went to Philly and other labels. And that was an affiliate label of Motown called Mo West.
Mo West and Mo Max. And the spiraling of the artists and the writers and everybody else, because, you know, at that time, as Motown was heading west, Holland, Dozier, and Holland split.
Yeah,
and they were doing the stuff for Invictus and Hot Wax.
Right.
All that's in that same time frame. Yeah, so there's going to be a difference in everything, production-wise, musician-wise, and everything else that goes with that.
Yeah, no, this is a track called Just a Little Bit Closer. Bobby Taylor in 1971. Local history. One of the most important artists to ever come to Vancouver and to profoundly influence the local scene.
When a baby cries and an old man smiles, when a loved one tries to understand me, then my world makes sense, stripped of all pretense. Love is common sense and understanding. I have learned to see all the love you see, and it helps me breathe just a love is bait. But you turn me around to see the good side. Things I thought I need, I no longer need. If I have you to please, then
for a while, our own Bobby Taylor. And this is not that long after he did his second Motown album. Still on Motown, but Mo West affiliate. And that's 1971. And he would not head back to Vancouver till the late 70s. So there was a period that Bobby Taylor wasn't here, right, Jason?
Absolutely, Matt. I did a lot of covering up his butt when he was performing here in Vancouver.
No, he wasn't here for, but one of the guys at the memorial said that Bobby came back around 79, something like
that.
So, you know, the time that Bobby Taylor put into Vancouver, it's so profound, you know, it's so profound, his contribution. And he's the one guy, Jason, that has an affinity with your position about being a black soul artist here. Like, he's the one guy that can completely relate.
He could totally relate, man. You know, we got kicked in the butt by the same people. They kicked our butts. You know, it was just the way it was. You know, we laughed about it more than anything else. We knew how people were. Some people were there, some people weren't. And a lot of people hated us, whatever we sang, wherever we drove in our buses, wherever, you know, record things would have, like, situations where you want to sell some of our records would be Jason Hoover Day at so-and-so's record store. And I go sign records all day long, man. And we smoothed 40, 50 records, so it was great.
Yeah. I mean, it's Vancouver history.
Yeah.
And Bobby Taylor, up until 2006... was an intricate part of it. So to play such a long part, amazing. And that's a track that we've never played before on the show. But coming up in a little while, we are going to feature Jason Hoover's second period. Of course, he was in this top soul group in the 60s, the Epics. Then he was in this amazing psychedelic soul band called The Trials of Jason Hoover. And then thirdly, he made his Mushroom Records album in the mid-70s, his soul funk album. But we're going to feature The Trials a little bit. Yeah. But next, we're going to funk it up with James Brown featuring this track right here called Blackenized here on African Rhythms 101.9 FM UBC Radio.
That's good.
You fellas better quit jiving. You better get yourself together and get blackenized, because that's the real thing that's happening now. So-called brothers telling lies. You colored people are just signifying. You better go to a natural school. Negroes get hot, black people get in the pool. I don't know whether you realize, before you get your respect, you got to be black or not. It took me a long time to cut my hair. The reason why, I wasn't aware. I didn't understand what it meant to be a man. But that's the only way in this man's land. I don't know whether you realize, before you get your respect, you got to be black or not. You've been leaning on others to be your keeper. That's why they call you Negroes and colored people. You better change your strap and get in the swing. Find yourself and do your own thing. Now, I don't know whether you realize, before you get your respect, you got to be black and nice. Hit it! Now, I don't know whether you realize, but before you can get recognized, you got to be black and nice. Now, I'm going to tell you one more time. Better try to find yourself, brother. And let me tell you something. It took me a long time to cut my hair. Reason why, I wasn't aware. I didn't understand what it meant to be a man, but that's the only way in this man's land. I don't think you realize, before you get your respect, you got to be black and white. Been leaning on others to be your keeper. That's why they call you Negroes and colored people. Better change your strut and get in a swing. Find yourself and do your own thing. I don't know whether you realize, before you get recognized, you got to be black or not. Hit it! I don't know whether you realize,
before you get recognized, brother, you got to be black and ass. Now you don't have to be like an Oreo cookie, brother. Black on the outside and white on the inside.
Oh man, this song is
now
so hilarious.
It's raw, it's raw.
But today is so necessary.
Blackenized. Has a record ever been as upfront?
Well, you know, James didn't pull any punches in. After he did I'm Black and I'm Proud, he did other message songs like Don't Be a Dropout, and Hank Ballard did a song called How You Gonna Get Respect, You Haven't Cut Your Process Yet.
Yeah.
So there were all of these things that he was doing because people were listening to him. And what folks may not recognize here is that black people liked what they saw in the mirror. That was very important.
Yeah.
That James was driving that music through, and all that rhythm that was coming out, essentially African, whether people had ever been to Africa or not, all of that stuff was flowing and
that
people
was
connected.
So,
it was positive.
Yeah. That was
they liked what they
that
saw.
That was Hank Ballard on lead vocals.
That's right.
Hank Ballard. Mm-hmm.
And a full-on James Bond production.
Ooh, footnote, Hank Ballard is the original author of The Twist. Not
oh,
Chucky
yeah.
Checker.
That's right.
It wasn't.
He wasn't. That's right. And the Midnighters, all his, they're all members of the, they're all members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But let's talk about your debut Trials of Jason Hoover single next, because that is when things really took off. Like, here this was, this amazing song that you had with your top group, The Epics. And then finally, you changed the name of the band, the manager changed the name, and you took on this more psychedelic approach. But yet, that first song was still your kind of stock soul thing.
Well, we were stuck in that. We actually did the best in the West Coast. We knew that. You know, we were very, very much into being geniuses of the music that we could play, because we'd been everywhere and we had never heard nobody really that could sound like us.
You and Jimmy wrote it, right? Jimmy Hermata.
Jimmy and
your
I
guitar
wrote,
player.
We wrote a lot of songs. You know, yeah. It's amazing that a lot of them haven't been all compiled.
Do you think that was sort of your signature song?
Yes,
King
it
Size.
Was my signature song. Come on. That had to be a strong signature song. Man.
Yeah. And you guys wrote it together.
Yeah, we wrote it together, man.
And right brought it to the band.
Right in my... No, it wasn't in the van. We perfected
you brought it
in,
to the band.
Yeah.
Yeah. After you wrote it.
Yeah.
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 Though this is an amazing song, and this is an amazing piece of Vancouver local soul history, so why don't we drop this track for the people? King Size, The Trials of Jason Hoover.
Here we go.
When the sun goes down, all right, I need my shoe. All of my soul is gone. Can you dig it, baby? All right, come on, man, get it. Got to get kids.
The legendary Jason Hoover, 1968, right there, top track,
yeah.
Vancouver Soul.
It was actually released in 69.
Right, yeah. Well, 68, would have been when it first got played, because that was the year that you opened for Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And I believe that very shortly after that is when it came out, was right after you opened for Zeppelin. So between 68 and 69, somewhere in there.
There you go. There you go. I'll live with that.
But that was sort of the beginning of the next phase of your career, which although you did the song on Cap Records and you did have the short time using the other name Anvil Chorus, in which Rhythm is the Way, which we'll talk about in a minute. But We Are All People, curiously, in 71, came out on a U.S. label, promo only in the U.S., and on the Canadian New Syndrome label, which mysteriously had some connection to Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm. For a long period of time.
It seems that there's some kind of a connection there. But We Are All People, which was written by you and
Harmata.
No.
Who was it? Kenny Wayne.
Wayne.
Yeah, I wrote a song with him.
Was he the keyboard player?
Kenny Wayne was our keyboard player, and he was a very talented he had a group before that was very famous. They had records out before the Epics, but they were called Painter.
Okay.
But the lyrics in We Are All People, the times are changing. Like, tell me about the lyrics. Like, it's a little bit, almost like socially conscious a little
bit.
All right,
I'm in Windsor, Ontario now. That's right across from Detroit.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sitting there, and I've got these songs in my mind, and We Are All People hit me, because, you know, you could just walk down Detroit Street.
What did it mean, We Are All People, and the times are changing, whatever? Like, was this like what you were feeling in the early 70s about what was going on around you?
I'm feeling that so strong, and it was like big time, man.
Yeah.
It was big changes. Blacks were finally slowly letting the whites accept them, you know?
Yeah. So it was, there was a racial element to We Are All People.
Big racial
element. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, We Are All People, we're all the same.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right.
And I grabbed off that.
I think you hit it right on the head when you're talking about the socially conscious action, because that early 70s parts, that was just a further manifestation of people, of black people loving each other. You know, the material was totally written differently.
Exactly.
You know, you wrote love ballads back in the day. You know, it was like, baby, give me some. But this was about, someday we're going to all be free. You know, we're going to all make it.
Marvin changed it.
Yeah, everything changed when Marvin did that. And a lot of artists followed suit.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into Freedom Train on the other side, which is another socially conscious kind of track. So Jason Hoover was getting deep in 1971. Mm-hmm.
But you must remember, it started, though, with Are You Ready? Yeah. And then, because...
All right, well, we'll listen to that a different time, but here we're going to drop this We Are All People. And
you can
see, like in 71, with the trials of Jason Hoover, just how deep the lyrics were and just how good the music was.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, you know, you think of the facts that, according to the research that I found, that it only came out on U.S. promo and the local. You can see how that stifled or sabotaged really its success. I mean, there's nothing musically wrong with that track.
There's not a damn thing.
The lyrics is conscious. It's kind of got a feeling for what's going on at the time.
Nice time change in between. No, it was
the band was tight.
The band was tight. There was a lot of stuff going on and all of that. And I think when they do something like that, put out a promo like that, somebody's fishing.
Yeah. And I mean, this is local Vancouver Soul. Yeah, this is local Vancouver Soul. And the U.S. label asked, you know, you produced this 7 for them and both sides were killer. That was the B-side. Mm-hmm. We Are All People. That's not even the Freedom Train, which we're going to listen to in a sec as well. The A-side. I mean, just an unbelievably good 45. But yet the U.S. affiliate not only doesn't come through with the potentially promised album, they don't even put it out.
Tell them.
I'm talking about three albums, you guys.
A three album deal you were hoping, which is why you put the 40.
Well,
I mean, you delivered the goods.
No kidding.
Yeah. Jason delivered the goods. I mean, that was a very, for a local soul single, it's one of the best that's ever been put out.
Uh-huh. You know? Thank you, guys.
You know? I mean, thank God I feel so honored to even know it, you know, just to know stuff that good. And how many people locally do know it?
Not too many.
And that's the bigger problem. Because when you and Hermata were writing all this stuff, what did you have in mind?
Well, because Hermata didn't write that
one. Let me ask this, because when artists put stuff together, they have a mindset about what they want and they know the market in which they're working in. Now, obviously, there were trials here because you weren't getting played and you knew from being here, growing up in Edmonton, that there was a certain type of music that was acceptable for airplay and for dance play or what have you. Mm-hmm. So where in the creative process did this cause conflict, if at all, when you were putting music together?
I have to agree with you, man. We were in a situation that we were looking for anything, you know, and looking for something that was real and we could maybe trust, you know. It was hard because people were trying to rip us off, give us free studio time, and we could sleep in the studio if you wanted to. They supplied all the tape, and, you know, we didn't see much after we'd mixed down the songs.
But did you realize, like a song like that, did you realize how good the stuff you were making was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the same.
I don't think most artists really believe how good it is until they
I think
they
that as an artist, people. You're insecure with your own stuff no matter
we
how
are.
Good you
we
are sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
We always
yeah.
are.
Well, all right. Well, let's listen to a slightly, as I like to look at it, more psychedelic Trials of Jason Hoover track. And this is an interesting one. There's even a unique video on YouTube for this. And this is a track called We Were Happy.
Hmm.
We lived in a shack by the edge of the river. I didn't earn much, so there wasn't much to give her. Oh, we were poor, we were rich in a way. For our love was love and it filled every day with a soft warm glow. We were happy. One night she awoke, burning up with a fever. I knew she needed help, but I didn't want to leave her. I ran through the night till I thought I would drop. I got to the road, but not one car would stop. And I knew she was dying. I knelt by her side and I prayed until and then as the first sight of dawn gently touched her sweet face, I could tell she was gone. We lived in a
sat by the edge of the river. I didn't earn much, so there wasn't much to give her. But though we were poor, we were rich in a way. For our love was love, and it filled every day with the soft glow. We were happy.
And that is the psychedelic early 70s, courtesy of local legend Jason Hoover. What do you think of that track? Different.
Well, it was fun making it, believe me. It was so much fun making it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was one of the more eclectically different trials.
That's the right word. Because yeah. I know you're creating all this stuff. You've got the background as well as all the augment. Arrangements and whatnot in your head at the same time. And when that comes out, does it come out exactly like you think it sounds? Like, are you believing that, okay, yes. I got to put this little violin flavor right here, just in this little spot right here?
That's a good question. You know, sometimes when you bake a cake, you know, some people put a little extra this, a little extra that to make it their own. Mm. Well, that's what we basically were doing.
And doesn't sound really like anybody else totally. It's influenced a little bit here and there, like Lady Jane Stones, this and that. But definitely there's a nod to the psychedelia that was going on.
And it's a key to Jason's material is that it doesn't sound like anybody else's.
Thank you.
I mean, we've listened to this stuff over and over again. So it's, like, it's just us reminding the fans or the listeners this because it really doesn't sound like anybody else's. And when you come out with that much material, common sense, and I ain't a logical cat, but common sense would say any record company would have said, let's take this forward and do something with it.
That would have been lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's all about money and damn thing funny. At that time, nobody wanted to push a black artist. It was just, you know, not heard of.
Well, certainly there was things going on behind the scenes.
That's right.
We're going to, in a sec... not right next, but soon we're going to check out The Rhythm is the Way, which is the one that got released in Europe so many times. And yet...
All over Europe.
How many checks came back because of it?
Plus, it was in a European movie, dance movie.
Yeah, what came of it all and why they never toured Europe, we're going to get into. But next, before that, we're going to listen to this really beautiful early 80s soul track, Terria. And it's a track called Pretty Bird here on African Rhythms. My special guests, Michael Ingram and the legendary local soul hero, Jason Hoover.
Free. Now do you wish to be you or just a sparrow, just a simple sparrow? Now do you understand he's worthless as a sand, but free as a breeze, and he goes.
CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio. Killiam Shakespeare here on African Rhythm. Something fresh from the last year from Philly. And then before that, Terria, Pretty Bird, and a wonderful track too. Hey, Mike.
Beautiful track, bro. Yeah. And actually, both of those back-to-back, really nicely done.
Yeah.
The Killiam Shakespeare sounds so much like a lot of the neo-soul that came out.
Yeah.
And nicely done.
Hard
I'm surprised
to get exposure.
They're not signing you.
Yeah.
Well, in this era, it is kind of harder for a new actor not just get out, but to stay
right.
out and have somebody get interested enough in them to invest in them to do work.
Yeah, I mean, self-released is the only way you got to get it out. I had to source that. It hasn't come on vinyl. It's just a CD out of Philadelphia. I heard it on Giles Peterson from over in the UK, and certainly notable modern. And then the Terria, Pretty Bird, that was quite a groove.
That
Jason?
Was a real, real different groove. And, well, it was great groove, man. It's new. It was a new groove.
Yeah, you know, that was that was actually early 80s. And then the last one we just heard was Killiam Shakespeare. That's brand new from Philly.
That's right, like yesterday.
Yeah, New York and Philly are Mike's hometowns. So he spent a lot of time in both those places. So Vancouver has benefited greatly from Mike spending some of his time here.
Yeah, I second the motion on that.
Yeah, transferring the soulfulness to Van City.
Van City. I like that.
But Tarika Blue is an obscure name from the 70s. Just put out a couple of albums, but had always had a lot of difficulty finding anything. But this next track, Jason and Mike, you're both going to find this really inspiring. Luckily, somebody's put it out again on a 45,
okay.
But this is one of the most amazing 70s. We'll call it jazz fusion soul. How about that?
All right.
Started to live.
Irene Datcher on lead vocals, Tarika Blue, a cult record on Chiaroscuro Records out of 1977 and out of the Philly area.
Well, actually, Wilkes Bar is maybe 30 minutes offside of Pennsylvania, and given the era back then, somebody spent a little bit of coin behind that because Philly was already established as a music town, but you weren't getting jazz. I mean, you had MFSB and other acts and all that, and you had the OJs and whatnot, but you didn't have straight-ahead jazz. And fusion was still very much in vogue then, so this was like one of those little experimental labels where you could get stuff done. You know, it's like a musician's label.
Well, it was pretty international because Ryo Kawasaki from Japan, the guitar player on that track, was involved. So in 77, that fusion Japan musicianship thing was blowing
up. That was big over there, too. You had Kimiko Kasai, you had Hiroshima. All of those cats were playing in that same era. Fusion was big around the world, actually, at that time.
Yeah, no, that was a quality track, Jason. Yeah. Truth is the key. Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe how well it was done. I was going to ask you who are these musicians? Are they Japanese or
no? Just the one guy, the guitar player, is Japanese. They're mostly out of the New York, Philly kind of area. It would seem. You know, these are some high level. Philip Klenderman played that incredible Fender Rhodes Arp Odyssey, I believe that was.
Fender Rhodes, that's 70s right there.
Yeah, and Philip Klendenim.
Klendenim.
He played on Ryo Kawasaki's records themselves, in fact, multiple Ryo Kawasaki, and then he played on other James Mason, who's another gentleman who's on this album, a cult figure, on Angie Allen Gums. I think you probably know him. He's another fusion artist, but these are all the people kind of associated with that scene. But
see, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but this is what happens when you have a city that understands its talent. You know, all of that music came out of that town and it was also supported. You may not have heard this type of music on the pop stations, but there were jazz stations, there were soul stations, there were even what you want to call public service or public access stations that would play this kind of stuff in the same mode that CFRO plays music here. You know, so there was always a vehicle for this type of stuff to go out. You had all kinds of flavor coming out of that city, and they were all glad to claim Philadelphia as the source for all of this. Vancouver could have been just as responsible with this.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, you think of, you know, the next track that we're going to play from your psychedelic soul band, which was your second group after the Epics. And this is getting back to 1971. But the track that seems to have been marketed the most, Jason, in Europe was Anvil Chorus, your short-lived vocal group's name. Trials of Jason Hoover temporarily took a sidewind and was called Anvil Chorus, right?
That's right. And it was not because of management or the record company forcing us. No, it was a group thing. It was a group envy thing, a jealousy thing.
They didn't like the Jason Hoover being in the name.
No, they thought the group would be much happier if we went for Anvil Chorus. They picked the name out of that's an old song, Anvil Chorus, years and years ago.
Yeah, Anvil Chorus, I think it's some kind of an opera.
You mean the classical piece?
Yeah, but, you know, it's very psychedelic sounding, and it appears, you know, being, you know, we were showing the multiple colored picture-covered sevens that came out in Europe of Anvil Chorus. If you look up on Instagram, Vinyl Records Vancouver, you can look at those. But they are it shows you that they made an effort to break Rhythm is the Way in Europe, and in fact it was even in a film, right?
Yes, it was in a French film, and they played half the song, which blew our minds, you know.
Yeah, we're gonna have to find out what film that is.
There's a chore for you, David.
We are trying to finish a documentary on local soul history, and Jason Hoover is the featured artist that we're documenting local, because let's face it, Bobby Taylor was American and he had a profound effect on the local scene, but Jason is the most important soul singer to ever come out of Vancouver. You know, you look at the legacy, the Epics, top group in the 60s, The Trials of Jason Hoover, the psychedelic soul, the Sly Stone flavored track we're about to listen to, which was heavily marketed in Europe. In fact, it was released in 8 to 10 different countries, this next 45. Yet, how much did you ever see from that?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely minus zero.
Yeah. Damn. So it seems that somehow the communication of the success of that, although it was heavily marketed with different color picture covers, have a look up on our Instagram, Bono Records Vancouver.
Ralph Harding made a killing. Now, Ralph Harding owned all that.
Right.
He would take trips after we'd come out of the studio with our master tape and said he'd be back. He's going to shop it in Europe.
Oh, he told you that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's what we were looking. We were looking forward to having success.
You should have had a tour in Europe from this 45 alone. With that much effort put into putting Anvil Chorus in so many countries, putting your picture out in all those countries. But somehow, it seems, Mike, that the going to the Anvil Chorus somehow did not serve Jason very well.
It sounds like, and this is just my opinion, that the Anvil Chorus name change gave whoever this person was license to go over there and go fishing with your work and have you guys not get credit for it. Mm-hmm. Because if this was still the Trials of Jason Hoover, something would have been down verifying that you were the artist. You'd have had money coming directly to you because the name was already established. And if I remember right, I could be wrong on the timeline, but weren't you still doing or had just finished the CBC show and was moving?
That was
on
about
to
3 years before.
Okay,
the
right.
CBC
so I stand
show.
Corrected on
yeah.
that. But you get my
the
point.
First one was King Size, which King came out Size. An hour a year after the
okay.
CBC show.
So yeah. so the real question I'm asking is, why the name change aside from the band saying that they are upset about this? Why didn't the management make the proper changes to make sure that when this got shot that you guys got properly compensated?
Well, not only compensated, but why did it not lead to an album? Why did it not mm-hmm. lead to a tour? And why was he kept so in the dark about any kind of exposure? Yeah.
Well, I think that Mr. Ralph Harding, and I know he's still alive, he figured he could get away, and he did. He figured it right down to a T, how he could make money. Yeah. He would take soon as after we get out of any studio, we'd work maybe 2 or 3 weeks in the studio, and we come up with maybe 4 or 5 tunes.
But this did get released under Trials of Jason Hoover, like over here on the New Syndrome. Although, you know, in Europe it was Anvil Chorus. But, you know, it's a very big song, folks. And so we're going to want to drop this now so you can hear what this is all about. I mean, this is locally made psych, soul, and funk of the highest degree of quality.
Wow. All of us have worries, surprise and wonder.
But, you know, there's other connections for this is my guest, Jason Hoover's band, the Trials of Jason Hoover from 71. But, you know, there's other connections with Sly Stone because, I mean, that's multiracial band, too, you know. So you guys, just like Bobby Taylor, yeah, you guys were rocking the into the 70s with a freedom in so many ways.
First in Canada, for sure. You got to look at the list. The Del Vikings with the doo-wop group,
mm-hmm,
Sly and the Family Stone, Bobby Taylor and the Vancouver's, and you guys.
Yeah. You know, you guys.
We did really well. And 1986 was just around the corner. And it was the World's Fair here in the beautiful West Coast in Vancouver. And it was a 6.5 month fair. It was like, oh gosh, I can't explain it. It was like magical land to me. I mean, I've been to Disneyland. This wiped Disneyland out, man. And it was that hall under the bridge. That's the Oak Street Bridge. I'm talking about the what's the one that starts with G? I'm losing my mind. Main Street in Vancouver.
Granville.
But what if the Trials of Jason were like in 71 doing a track like Rhythm is the Way live, like what kind of a reaction would Trials of Jason get compared to the Epics? Like would you be playing dances and like the Hollywood Bowl and things like that?
Well, the Epics did all that too, but we were now
in the rock scene.
We were into opening for major groups.
Mm-hmm. Like Uriah Heep.
Yeah,
Soft Machine.
That's right. Yeah. You got all that stuff down, man. Yeah. This guy's amazing. Yeah. And it was our job, man, to represent Vancouver because we were representing them.
Exactly.
But, I mean, here you are
not
doing...
Not just here, but other cities. Mm-hmm.
But you were doing psychedelic soul rock. So how were they feeling? Because, you know, Sly was at Woodstock, right?
Sly was at Woodstock.
Yeah. He got his respect in Woodstock, yes. Yeah.
Well, he was part of Woodstock.
He did. Yeah. By that time, we had done about 8 festivals ourselves.
So you were crossing over to some of those same hippies.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we were doing... You know, a couple
so you
of
dabbled with the rock heavily.
Yes.
You heavily got into the rock. How did it feel in the end?
I felt powerful.
Yeah. But did you somehow get sick of it at a certain point?
No, man. I used to look at the girls and watch the people all just get together and just.
But what about, the fact that you changed so much into a soul funk album with Mushroom? So at a certain point, you must have got tired of the rock thing.
No, it was just that nothing was happening anymore. I mean, they look at you and, oh, yeah, we liked your last album, man. And this is like 6 years ago. You go, oh, wow, man.
But you were drawn to make more soul funk, though.
That's
and
right.
Less rock.
I was drawn.
But why?
Freedom training.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I knew I was unique. I just wanted to keep it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But why? Would it be that soul funk was truer to your soul than rock?
Of course, man.
Yeah.
I mean, even though I was brought up in Edmonton and my first band, the Emeralds, we were rock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and my next band was rock. You know, still Vancouver. And I go down to Vancouver and I get into R&B for the first time in my life.
But you learned fast.
Oh, mm-hmm. Did I ever?
Yeah, no, I mean, you were like a Hoover.
Sucked it all up.
He's been setting that up for a long time.
That's the funniest thing I've ever said on the air.
All right, Michael.
All right, well, take it on out, my friend Mike.
All right, from Kitsilano to Kamloops, from Strathcona to South Vancouver, if you want to know where the soul trees grow, the roots of it can be found right here on African Rhythms.
P peace to you, Jason Hoover. We're going to go out with some special boogie funk just for you. Webster Station, and If You Feel Like Dancing. Come back again soon, my friend. You've been listening to the legends of radio. Jason Hoover, the legend of Vancouver Soul, and the legend of Vancouver Talk and Soul Radio, Michael Ingram. Peace and love.
Hey, peace and love to you, baby.
It's a funky music. It's a funky music. Yeah, if you feel like dancing.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.